Time for Ask the Pharmacist, and Elizabeth Roddick joins us from New Life Pharmacy. Hello.
Hello, Simon.
And, well, I don't see, you know, everybody else is talking about this, so I think we should talk about this. Let's talk about Brexit, shall we? And actually, it's a serious side to it, though, because there's talk that Brexit, and of course, there's going to be a shortage of HRT. Now, that's given to women living with the menopause, isn't it?
It's interesting the press have picked up on the shortage of HRT. That's hormone replacement therapy, as you say, Simon. It's given to women at the menopause or change of life. And what happens at that time is estrogen levels drop and can produce quite difficult symptoms to cope with, such as memory loss, irrationality, as well as the well-known problems such as hot flushes, night sweats. And it means many women opt for this medication. However, we're now hearing the slight increase in risk of cancer is now up to 10 years after stopping. But I think as long as the woman is well informed and can ask all the questions they want when their doctor's prescribing it, I think it has to be a joint decision. But as I was saying, it's interesting that HRT has suddenly been picked up as being a problem, since we community pharmacists have been dealing with the shortages for some time now. And in fact, the public might or might not be aware that there are in fact dozens of medicines that are short just now.
And why are we short of medicines?
Well, there's lots of reasons, Simon. Some are known, some are unknown. Examples of why a medicine becomes unavailable could be a problem with the raw material. Another reason could be it's the MHRA. Now, that's the Medicines Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency. Now, that agency makes sure that medicines are safe, and they could take a particular medicine out of the market. It could be a safety issue, maybe a licensing issue. Again, they are responsible for licensing a medicine. And what happened last year was a whole company was actually shut down. So you can see how that would immediately create a shortage.
Of course, Big Pharma, they can control things a little bit by this, can't they?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's something called quotas. It's the pharmaceutical industry. What they do is they ration the number of packs that a pharmacy can keep one of their products. Sometimes they ask pharmacists even to fax the prescription, of course, deleting any names or addresses, any confidential information before they'll even release the product. And one of the problems with that system is, say a pharmacy uses 6 packets a month, then a new patient comes in. It can be quite frustrating, since you have to ask permission to increase your quota number in the pharmacy before the extra medicine is released. And that can, of course, cause delays. I'm not sure the public realise we've been wrestling with medicine shortages for literally years now. Often we work behind the scenes, sourcing medicines for our patients. Sometimes means going back to the GP with suggestions of an alternative. It can be a straight swap, or maybe taking 2 tablets daily of a half-strength medicine. On the other hand, you might have to take extra checks because, say, you're on a blood pressure medicine and it's changed to another type of or another class of medicine, then you would need to be monitored, maybe bloods and maybe blood pressure.
Now, that's the easy stuff. What about the drugs actually that are coming from abroad then?
Interestingly, I was having a conversation with one of the company's representatives. They produce vaccines abroad, and of course, flu vaccines will be arriving in GP surgeries and pharmacies from October, probably late October. And the reason they are a little bit late this year is because the World Health Organization made a change in one of the strains during the summer when the vaccines are made. Now, what the representative said to me was that his company had made arrangements in several ports around the UK. They had ready planes with refrigerated capacity. If a no deal does somehow take place, he was reassuring me that in his case, there'll be no problem with supply. I think the message I would like to get out to patients is, please just order your medicines at the normal time. I mean, someone worked out if every diabetic ordered their medication early, that would mean around 1 million packets coming out of the system ahead of time. So I think if everybody just orders their medicine at the normal time, I think it'll work.
Of course, you've got to, if you do that as well, you've got the risk that things go past their expiry date as well, haven't you?
That's one of the things that this MHRA agency is looking at. I mean, one of the things that was short recently were EpiPens. That's if you have an anaphylactic shock from an allergy. And what was happening was they were going out of date and they were also unavailable. So the MHRA made a decision and told us, you can use this pen for an extra, say, 3 months. Now, that might be something that comes out of this. Normally, we would say you cannot use a medicine after the expiring date. But on this occasion, they decided to relax things a bit because of the shortage. So these are the sort of things where we can get round some of the problems.
Did you mean expiring date or expiry date?
Expiry.
Right. Is that quite a serious headline? And it's linked to what we've been talking about, HRT. And the headline was, breast cancer, menopausal hormone therapy risks bigger than thought.
Yeah, I was having a look at the data, Simon, and researchers were from the Collaborative Group on Hormonal Factors in Breast Cancer. Now, they looked at previous studies on women who'd taken HRT. Since 1992, and 58 studies with over 500,000 women. It was found out of that study, 143,887 were diagnosed with breast cancer with an average age of 65. Now, we need to put this into context. About 1 in 16 women aged 50 to 69 develop breast cancer anyway, or 63 per 1,000 women. Now, if you're a woman using HRT for 5 years, then you'll have an equivalent of 20 extra cases per 1,000 women. Now, that's in those who take a combined estrogen and progesterone, because there are differences in depending what you're taking. And for example, if you're on intermittent progesterone with estrogen, there's about 14 extra cases per 1,000 women, and equivalent to 5 extra cases per 1,000 women in those who took estrogen only. 10 years, of course, would double the number of cases, and I think this was the point of the research. Now, if you're a woman thinking of starting to take HRT, as I said earlier, it must be an informed choice. Have a discussion with your GP, pharmacist, if you like. They'll tell you about the risks, but also the benefits of perhaps getting your life together. If you only have one of the symptoms of the menopause, say vaginal dryness, then you can be given an estrogen cream where there is no increase in breast cancer. That's important. It's also important to think how long you might be on the HRT. The longer you're on it, the greater is the risk. But as explained, it's a small increase in risk. If you're already on HRT, wish to come off, then have a chat with your GP, but please take it nice and gradually, because of course the symptoms can return if you come off it very quickly.
And I've heard of women talking about, you know, the risk of it, and they know there is a risk, but in their particular case it made life so much more manageable during the menopause.
I think you have to have that sort of conversation. What are the risks? What are the benefits? And clearly, if the benefits are way above the risks, then yes, you take the tablet.
Right. Now, this is a little thing, because you're a community pharmacist, and I thought this was quite interesting. You were telling me about one of your patients at your pharmacy that's got a problem with her eyes.
Yeah, a lady came in a couple of weeks ago and said, could I give her something for her mother? She had conjunctivitis.
I've tried that one.
In case you don't know, conjunctivitis, it's an infection or an allergy, and it affects the lids of the eyes and also the sort of covering the mucous membrane, covering the white of the eyes. And what happens is you get a lot of matter released. Sometimes the eyes stick together. Now, the first thing I said to the lady was, as a matter of principle, I don't prescribe. Usually it's an antibiotic, chloramphenicol, certainly without seeing the patient. And I said, well, if your mother really can't come up to the pharmacy, take a picture and I'll have a look at it. But I then went on to explain that conjunctivitis is a self-limiting condition. And if you persevere bathing with boiled, cooled water, just take one fresh piece of cotton wool, one sweep across the lids and discard it, the infection will clear eventually. Now, the daughter left the pharmacy. I didn't hear anything else until about 5 days later. The mother appeared into the pharmacy and I realised her eyes were nice and clear. And she went on to tell me that the infection had gone. As I said, I went on to congratulate her, actually, because I thought that was great. We must reserve our antibiotics for severe infections, not use them for self-limiting conditions. So I think there's an example where it was really good. She just did exactly as I suggested, using boiled, cooled water, pieces of cotton wool, and the infection did, in fact, go.
But the water has to be cool before you put it on, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it doesn't have to be cool.
But cooler than boiling.
But yes, you have to be very careful you don't burn your lids, etc.
You wouldn't put salt in it, then?
Well, salt, funnily enough, our table salt is full of impurities. So I tend to say to people, you know, why are you putting that into the water? Because the boiled cold water will do. We also have little sterile saline plastic, maybe 60 mils of it. And if somebody, a young lad came in with his mother the other day and she wasn't sure if he had something in his eye. So we just used one of these little sterile saline packs and just washed his eye out. And I then sent him to the optometrist. And in fact, they came back with, you know, asking for a particular medication. But that's who you need to go to if you do have a problem with your eyes generally. But they're maybe not there all the time. Some of the opticians are optometrists. And that's why we get an awful lot of queries in the pharmacy. And generally, we can, if possible, send them to the expert. But we can also deal with a lot of things in the pharmacy.
Right, and we'll finish off, if you don't mind. Now, I always talk quite a lot about statins, and usually it's, you know, about the cholesterol busting and the side effects that you can get possibly with them. But you were telling me off here that they might reduce the risk of glaucoma. Is that fine?
Yeah, interesting. This was research published in JAMA Ophthalmology in May of this year. They looked at studies involving over 136,000 patients. Now, they measured cholesterol levels in relation to the incidence of primary open-angle glaucoma. Now, they looked at a certain increase in cholesterol, and that increase resulted in a 7% increase in the risk of glaucoma. People with any history of statin use, interestingly, had a 15% lower risk of glaucoma than those who had never used statins. It's probably too early to recommend statin use for this particular reason, but the research has suggested that further work, obviously involving other disease reductions as well, is certainly something for the future. It was certainly something I'd never heard of before.
And again, as funny enough, I think I have heard something about that, but the thing is, would it have to go through all its testing if they were actually going to prescribe it for that?
Well, I think you have to do a lot of, as you know, randomised controlled trials. So those with statins and those who weren't taking statins. But the great thing is that we have a lot of data of the safety of statins. So in other words, we're not starting with a new drug. And that's good when they can find a new use for a drug that's been through all the safety checks, this MHRA checks, etc. If they've all been done, then that means we can use it in new trials for maybe new diseases or new, in this case, maybe a prevention.
But it might have a spin-off effect for those who are already prescribed it for cholesterol.
Yeah. Because normally, as I say, we're always talking about side effects, but this could be a benefit.
Right. Well, plenty to think about there. If there's anything there that's, you know, you've got a question about or you're not quite sure about, you can drop me a line here and I can get you in touch with Elizabeth, or you can get in touch with the pharmacy. It's New Life Pharmacy, and the web address is all the dots, W's rather, dot.
newlifepharmacy.co.uk.
And also you have the phone number.
0141 637 6000.
And while you're there, you might like to look at, Elizabeth's got another website there, which is for the more mature lady.
Oh, yes.
And some great advice on that.
PRqualitylife.com.
Yeah, yeah, some good stuff on there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Elizabeth, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. You put so much work into this. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Simon.